Welcome to the Down to Agribusiness podcast, a regular discussion on the latest topics and trends affecting global agribusiness.
Okay, welcome to the latest edition of the Animal Farm podcast, which comes from Rome. I'm currently at the FAO headquarters. We found a quiet room. There's currently a meeting going on about foot and mouth disease, so I've come to find out about the disease and about efforts to prevent it through vaccination. I'm speaking to Galvmed's Dr. Jeremy Salt at the moment, and I thought we'd have a conversation about sort of more general terms about the impact of FMD globally. So could you give me an idea of the sort of countries that have felt the impact of FMD the most around the world?
Sure. FMD, the regions where FMD occurs now are fairly limited. So really the impact of FMD as a disease very much depends on the endemic situation. So in endemic countries, that implies that the virus or virus strains are circulating almost continuously. In that case, the losses largely are on production. These are not always reported as much as you might think, because it's more of a day-to-day issue that people are dealing with. They're aware of these things. It affects milk production if you've got dairy cows. It affects draft power if you're using animals for draft. In very young animals, you can actually see deaths. So when you have a new strain coming through that there's no immunity to, then you can actually see fairly severe morbidity and mortality, particularly in young animals. High producing dairy areas is another particular segment of the livestock sector where there's a big impact of FMD. You can lose milk production potentially. That doesn't always recover. Those are in endemic regions. The other major significant impact is in FMD is when there's an epidemic, and that can happen in regions where there is either no FMD or very little FMD. So large parts of the world now either historically or have gained freedom through gradual control programs, vaccination possibly, and are now free, and they trade as free nations. So you can imagine if FMD comes into one of those countries, it's a very significant impact, not only in the direct cost of controlling an epidemic outbreak, which is fairly significant. Most developed countries would now use culling policies. You can potentially ring vaccinate. But the biggest impact probably overall is impact on loss of the disease-free status, which then impacts the ability to trade with other countries of similar disease-free status.
And geographically, which areas are
these? Yeah, so it's broadly a north-south divide, although not completely. So the North America is now historically FMD-free. Australia would be FMD-free. Large parts of Southeast Asia, which over the last 100 years or so have suffered from endemic FMD, have now made great inroads into eradicating FMD. So large parts of Southeast Asia are now FMD-free. Europe eradicated FMD back in the late 80s and then stopped vaccinating. So that's another big block, which is now FMD-free, which leaves FMD as an endemic disease, really confined to the Asian Asian subcontinent, okay. Indian subcontinent, yeah. South Asia, small parts of Southeast Asia, and China being probably the most significant livestock country at the moment that still has endemic FMD.
So in the grand scheme of animal diseases, so African swine fever is all over the news at the moment. In the last month or so, we've heard about avian flu in Europe. In the grand scheme of things, how significant are outbreaks of foot and mouth disease? How does it rate on the list of the most concerning animal diseases?
Okay, well, so going back to that broad split between free countries, free regions and endemic regions, it's probably the most feared disease in free countries. So the free countries will be looking very much at biosecurity to try and keep FMD out, and then contingency plans if FMD comes in, because it's a very, very significant disease. It spreads very easily, highly contagious. In endemic regions, it probably, in some regions, depending on the livestock industry there, in some regions people would put it in the top diseases that they're worried about. So I'm thinking in China with some of their high production units now, both in swine and in ruminants. in continents like Africa and in India, it's not quite as obvious. And we've recently conducted a survey on diseases that are having the greatest impact on smallholder farmers. FMD does feature in the top six diseases. It's usually there. I think probably what happens is, as I said earlier, people get used to the idea that a wave of FMD is coming through. It happens so frequently because surveillance is difficult in a lot of these countries. The infrastructure is not there. Could you repeat the question, please?
Could you give an overview of the best practices in terms of preventing FMD?
So the basis of most FMD prevention is around prevention of introduction. So if you're a region or a country that's free, a lot of time and effort is placed on making sure that trading partners are also of the similar status to you. So that's a key if you're an FMD free area, is to keep the virus out. If you're in an endemic region, the best you can do really is your own limited biosecurity. So being aware of disease situation with your neighbours, if you hear about FMD in the locality, then trying to reduce the movement of people or straw, bedding, feed onto your farm from areas where you think there may be infection. And that's just good biosecurity practice, because FMD can be carried in by people, on people's shoes, under their fingernails. It can come in on food. It's a highly contagious virus. So biosecurity is probably a good basic. Obviously, on top of that, in an endemic region, I think the recommendation would have to be to vaccinate with an appropriate vaccine. That's probably the safest situation you have. But in situations where there isn't a vaccine, or it's not readily available, or it hasn't been adopted, then the best you can do really is biosecurity.
And what type of vaccines are out there for commercially available for FMD?
Okay, well, they haven't, over the years, they haven't really changed very much.
Okay.
These are whole virus inactivated vaccines. The science of it and the process goes back a long way now. These days, there are very good techniques for purification of the material, which wasn't present some years ago. Nonetheless, the basic technology of the vaccine is still to grow the virus in bulk, inactivate it, concentrate it, and then adjuvant it as an inactivated vaccine, and then use it as a ready-to-use liquid vaccine. So that's basically how the world vaccinates against FMD. There have been multiple attempts in the past, and there is in China, there is an alternative approach with a peptide-based vaccine, but this is fairly limited use at the moment. We know that there are multiple other technologies currently in development, and they offer some big advantages. The major disadvantage of FMD vaccine production at the moment is that it has to be produced in a high containment facility, which is very expensive.
Are you able to envisage an ideal vaccine for FMD? If you can, what would its characteristics be?
Sure. Yeah, it's FMD vaccines, they're inactivated vaccines, and by and large, the recommendation is to give a two-shot vaccination, primary vaccination course, which will then need repeat immunizations over time to keep up the animal's immunity. So obviously, if you just consider that profile, a very clear improvement would be to have a vaccine with a longer duration of immunity, and also just a single-shot initial primary vaccination. So that would be an extremely good advantage. The other aspects of FMD vaccines are, apart from a relatively short duration of immunity, is their stability. So that limits the shelf life of the vaccine. So a vaccine that came forward with a longer shelf life would certainly be more useful in the field, and that may encourage improved distribution processes. The other aspect of FMD, which is often a concern, is that vaccinated animals, if they come across infection, can become persistently infected. And the big concern, and a lot of the international trade regulations around FMD are written because of this fear of an animal that's been exposed to the virus, still carrying the virus, and then being able to establish another infection. So a vaccine that could actually clearly prevent the chances of an infected animal becoming a persistently infected animal would also be seen as a big advantage.
How likely is this ideal vaccine, how likely is it that it can become reality?
It's difficult to put a figure on it. I think there's a lot more known about FMD than in the past 50 years. And in the last 10 years, an awful lot of progress has been made in terms of alternative technologies for producing FMD vaccines. Adjuvant technology has also improved. So even the conventional whole virus vaccines now with modern adjuvants possibly lend themselves to gaining some of those advantages that we were talking about in the ideal profile. So a longer duration of immunity, a single shot vaccine. I think there are signs that these are now becoming possible.
Okay, let's just imagine, if you will, this ideal vaccine exists. Does that necessarily mean that it will be used on farm, say a smallholder farm in Africa, or will still barriers to its use still exist?
Yeah, there are always barriers. I mean, if there are always considerations that any livestock keeper is going to make. So for a disease like FMD, it's considered a public good quite often, which means in the case of a vaccine manufacturer, then almost certainly the sales will be with the government's intervention. So the barriers that could be reduced that could help the uptake of vaccine would be a greater availability. So governments quite often have to prioritise in the same way that an individual livestock keeper would prioritise their own investments in their animals. The government also has to prioritise. So certainly having initiatives where the vaccine was more widely available so that an individual producer was able to make their own decision unencumbered in some ways by the government's ability to pay for, order and distribute vaccines would certainly give the individual livestock owner greater choice. And then they could make their own commercial decision about whether they were going to vaccinate that animal or not. Now, overarching this whole thing would have to be the government's own policy on FMD control because it is a notifiable disease. But nonetheless, I think by giving the consumer greater choice in whether they want to spend their money on FMD vaccination should overall allow people to have a greater uptake of the vaccine.
Okay, we've just heard from Galvmed's Jeremy Salt about FMD in general and the vaccines that are commercially available to prevent FMD and some of their drawbacks. And now I'm talking to Nina Henning, also from Galvmed. And I wondered if you could tell me about how Galvmed is involved in developing potential new vaccines for foot and mouth disease.
Yeah, sure. So we have a competition that we're involved in now. It's called the AgResults Foot and Mouth Disease Vaccine Challenge Project. And the basic goal of the initiative is to develop, to support the development and uptake of high quality vaccines for the Eastern African region. It's set up, so we sort of interchangeably call it a project and a competition. The project is sort of the overall timeline from start to finish, but I can explain sort of how that works and how it's broken up into different phases. So we've just kicked off today the launch of the project, and the first phase that will essentially start now is what we're calling the development phase. And this is where we're really engaging with animal health pharmaceutical companies who are interested in developing a high-quality FMD vaccine that is tailored to the strains of the disease that exist, of the virus that exists in Eastern Africa. And so what we've done is we've developed a target product profile that lists out the characteristics of the vaccine that have to be met in order for the vaccine to be qualified for the AgResults competition. So from this point forward, we'll be engaging with industry, with animal health pharmaceutical companies, vaccine producers, who express interest in working to develop the vaccines that meet this criteria. Mm. And basically, to get through to the next phase, they have to first develop the vaccine. The second step would be the registration of the vaccine in at least two of our target countries in Eastern Africa. So in scope for the project, we have six target countries. Those are Burundi, Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, Ethiopia, and Rwanda. So initially the vaccine should be registered in at least two of those countries in order to be eligible to move into the next phase of the competition. And then once the registration is complete, the whole application will be reviewed from what we call the Ag Results Judging Panel, which will be made up of FMD, regulatory industry experts, who will be an independent body reviewing all of the eligibility criteria. And once that approval is done, then the vaccine would move into what we call the cost share phase, which is the second phase. The timelines that we're looking at for the development phase are somewhere between 2 to 4 years. And there's a bit of uncertainty because we don't know exactly how long it's going to take for the vaccine producers to come up with a vaccine that matches the criteria that we've laid out in our competition rules. And so at some point between that 2 to 4 years, we hopefully will have our first eligible vaccine. The competition is open to multiple vaccines. So even if one vaccine is approved, other companies can still be working on and seeking the approval for their own vaccines. And we would actually hope and encourage that we would have multiple vaccines coming into the Eastern African region that match our criteria. So moving into the cost share phase, this is where the funding from Ag Results comes into the picture. And it comes in the form of what we're calling a cost share mechanism, which is essentially the payment of a portion of the purchase price of the vaccine. So in other words, the buyer, whether it be a private sector buyer or a public sector buyer from one of these target countries in Eastern Africa, will pay a portion of the price, and the Ag Results funding will cover the other portion. And it's set up so that each year the percentage of the cost share starts out in year one at the highest point and slowly decreases over a four-year period. And I can get into the exact percentages if you want me to. But then the volume of cost share doses increases year on year. So the idea is that by year four, you've reached a volume of doses sold that would be encouraging and incentivizing to a vaccine producer to want to get into this market. So in terms of what those numbers look like, in year one, the coverage is 75% of the purchase price of the vaccine, up to a purchase price of $2. If the vaccine price is more than $2, that excess portion would be covered by the buyer. So just as an illustrative example, if the purchase price was $2, Ag Results would pay $1.50 and the buyer would pay 50 cents in year one. And then that, as I mentioned, decreases year on year. So 65% year two, 55% year three, and 45% in year four. And the idea behind that is to sort of get to a pricing that's more in sync with what the actual pricing will be once the project ends, as we get closer and closer to the end of the project.
You mentioned that the first stage of the project would be about 2 to 4 years. How about the second phase? And is there any kind of timeline for the whole competition?
Yeah, so the second phase, as I mentioned, the total is 4.5 years, and we talk about it from year one to year four. So that's that sliding scale of the cost. cost share from 75% to 45%. So 4.5 years, and the reason for that half year is that we're looking at a year and a half in year one, just in case of a delay in terms of the initial buyer uptake of the vaccines. And so if you put those two together, the overall timeline is anywhere from 6.5 to 8 years. And that little bit of uncertainty is just around, again, the time it's going to take for a vaccine producer to come in with an approved vaccine that meets our eligibility criteria.
And among the sort of partners that you mentioned, who will be sort of testing the vaccines to judge their quality?
Yeah, so there's an initial set of testing that will happen as part of the eligibility criteria that's focused on matching the vaccine strains with the strains that are prevalent in Eastern Africa. And there's a panel that's of virus strains that's being developed by through a twinning project between the Pervite Institute and AUPanVac in Ethiopia. And so the panel that is coming out of that work, that's just about ready, is what the vaccine producers will use in the initial development phases to ensure that their vaccine is tailored to the strains that exist that are most prevalent in Eastern Africa. Part of the eligibility criteria will be an independent lab verification of that matching, and that, you know, the details of that will be available on our website in a couple of weeks in the official competition rules.
So just to check, if I were the chief scientific officer or CEO of a veterinary vaccine company, how do I apply for this? Is it just get in contact with GalvMed or just go through the website?
Yeah, so the GalvMed, if you go to the GalvMed website, we now have information about the competition available. The full official competition rules will be available on the website starting from February 7th, so in a couple of weeks. In terms of applying, because of the timelines that I talked about for the development phase, where we don't expect the first vaccine to come in prior to 2 years from now, so the 2-year mark of the project, the application submission will begin no sooner than a year from now. So the actual application will be available on the GalvMed website as of July 1st. So for now, there is all of the rules of engagement, official competition rules are there. So everything that will be required in terms of the characteristics of the vaccine and the testing, but the actual application will be available later this year.
And just to finish, I wondered if you could give me if all goes to plan and there's this new FMD vaccine, could you give me a kind of case study of how this prize, this competition, can sort of bring benefits to smallholder farmers in Africa?
Yeah, thank you for asking that question, because I think that's really at the core of why we're doing this competition, is ultimately to bring a better tool for combating foot and mouth disease to smallholder farmers. We haven't talked about the impacts, but the impacts, you know, on milk productivity are significant. And currently, there's the options for treatment are minimal. And so, basically, the way this competition has been structured, we're hoping that the financial incentive that's coming in from AgResults will drive growth of the FMD vaccine market in Eastern Africa. And one aspect that I didn't mention previously is there's a portion of the vaccines that will be set aside for private sector purchasing. Historically, in the region, FMD vaccine purchase has largely been driven by the public sector. And this is it makes it a bit challenging for a vaccine producer to have reliable sales because of the inconsistency in budgets and political priorities that come when you're selling exclusively or almost exclusively to governments. So this one of the objectives of the competition is to try to liberalize the Eastern African markets and open them up through influencing policy, raising awareness about the new vaccines, both amongst the government players as well as the private sector distributors at the national level and at the district or provincial level. And we believe that through this growth of a private sector market in Eastern Africa, that will really be the driver for increased accessibility of the high quality vaccines for smallholder farmers. The private sector will need to do some investment in education and awareness of how these vaccines are different from what's been previously available. But we believe that that is part of what will happen with this financial incentive that's going to come in through the Ag Results competition.
Okay, so we've heard from Galvamed about the FMD project, but Galvamed are partnering with Ag Results on this competition. And I'm here with the Ag Results Secretariat, Rodrigo Ortiz. Rodrigo, could you explain who Ag Results is, first of all?
Ag Results is a program funded by five of the largest donors in the world. It's the government of Britain through DFID, the United States government through USAID, the Australian government through DFAT, and the Canadian government through Global Affairs Canada, as well as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They came together, they created a $158 million trust fund that's administered by the World Bank to promote contests and projects of this sort to address human nutrition, human health, animal health, and food security issues for the poorest of the poor around the world.
So these competitions that you're organizing, what other areas, apart from animal health, have you been running them in?
Well, these competitions are what we call pull mechanisms. In other words, it's pay-for-results competitions. Yeah. Funded one in Nigeria to address aflatoxin toxicity in maize, one in Zambia that looked at addressing vitamin A deficiency through a biofortified maize. There's one in Vietnam that's looking at greenhouse gas effects in paddy rice. So how can we reduce greenhouse gases in paddy rice while increasing productivity, which has a lot of significance in the climate change issues around the world right now.
Okay, so why have you now turned to foot and mouth disease?
Because foot and mouth disease in around the world, but in particularly in Eastern Africa, which has one of the largest livestock concentrations, has a very profound effect. It produces losses equivalent to about $2.5 billion a year as a result of reduced productivity and morbidity in livestock.
And was there any particular reason why you focused on East Africa?
Yes, the characteristics of foot and mouth disease in East Africa is that there's different serotypes that go changing and evolving over time. So the serotypes that are necessary in Eastern Africa are different than in Southern Africa or in Western Africa. So there's been very little attention given to the area. The existing vaccines are really not appropriate or effective. So the feeling was from our donor community that it would produce a profound effect if we could promote the development of a vaccine that was appropriate for the requirements of Eastern Africa. And by Eastern Africa, I'm talking about six countries, Ethiopia, Uganda, Rwanda, Kenya, Tanzania, and Burundi.
But when you were setting up this competition, was there, what sort of feedback did you get from other stakeholders like governments or even the end users of the actual FMD vaccines?
Well, one of the biggest limitations that the region has is they want to export livestock, especially Ethiopia and Kenya and other places. So there's a lot of interest from the meat industry, and there's a lot of interest from the dairy industry. They're being held back by the FMD export restrictions. So right now, the only way you can export is going through a very strict quarantine process. So vaccination as a preventative measure could produce a profound economic impact for these countries.
And in the past, I've published articles about the brucellosis prize that you're also involved in, and I was wondering if there was anything that you learnt from that particular competition that was particularly unexpected or influenced how you set up this this latest prize.
We definitely learned, and we're learning in this case also. The part of the learning was just the level of interest that was generated as a result of a contest. The contest will promote awareness, promote interest, where maybe companies aren't looking at an area because they're risk adverse or they don't feel that the investment costs are going to be sufficient for the return. The moment you have a contest, and that's the purpose of our project, you're incentivizing the private sector to move into an area that they might not have moved into because of that.
Yeah.
So in the case of brucellosis, we had a very favorable response. A lot of more companies applied than we originally envisioned. And in the case of FMD, the event today, we've had quite a turnout of international companies that are interested and who have already indicated their interest in following up.
And just to note, the brucellosis prize is an ongoing competition, isn't
yes,
it, still?
Yes, brucellosis contest is a 10-year project. We're moving into about the fourth year, and this will be an eight-and-a-half-year project.
Yeah. And so I spoke previously with Galvamed about the actual format of the foot and mouth disease competition. I was wondering, why does that particular format differ from the way the brucellosis prize is set up?
Okay. They are very different formats. Brucellosis, the format is to promote research and eventual registration of a vaccine that fulfills a specific target profile. In the case of FMD, it's much more complicated than that. We're talking about developing a vaccine specific to the requirements of Eastern Africa. Then it addresses the ability and awareness of the governments to purchase this vaccine and adopt it and go from emergency measures into more preventative measures. And the third biggest step is it will promote the registration of these projects, of these vaccines rather, where in the past they were only imported by governments for emergency reasons. Now they're going to be registered and promoted both through the private and the public sector.
And so if these two competitions are successful, could we see more animal health-based prizes in the future from AgResults?
It's hard to say. Our donors are the ones that determine that. They try to spread create a mix between animal health and human health and food security projects. We're currently developing two more additional projects, one in Indonesia and one in Western Africa, that are out of the animal
I'm at the FAO headquarters in Rome, and I'm talking to vaccine producers about foot and mouth disease vaccines. And I've managed to track down a company that is very involved in foot and mouth vaccines. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm Rodolfo Bellinzoni, Director of Operation and Innovation in Biogenesis.
And could you give a short overview of the work that your company has already carried out in the area of foot and mouth vaccines?
Yeah, Biogenesis Bagul has a long history on FMD since the 1950. We supply vaccines in Argentina. And since the 90s, we started to supply in all South American continents, and later we started to supply to Asian countries. And today we are one of the worldwide suppliers of foot and mouth disease vaccines. Even we supply the antigen and vaccine bank of North America. Now we have a business in South Korea, Vietnam, in Taiwan. We are trying to open market in another Asian countries too. Also, in the last 5 years, we developed HIV in China. We have a partner there, and we built up a facility. We designed the facility. We built up the facility with good tech transfer to China to produce foot and mouth disease vaccine in China.
And so, how commercially important is an FMD vaccine to your company? It sounds like it's one of your top products.
It's a top product of our company. So, mainly we focus the development of the company on foot and mouth disease vaccine until now.
And so, do you sell any of these vaccines in Africa?
Not yet. We would like to supply worldwide. First of all, we supply all the American continent. Now we are involved in Asia, and in the future we will look for Africa.
So what do you see as particular barriers or difficulties in actually developing an FMD vaccine for Africa?
Well, it's very complex, the diversity, and the farming is very unique, and the epidemiology looks like it's very well known, but there are many areas maybe need to be more further studies about, and there is a huge market but not developed yet.
And how about the commercial difficulties? What do you see there?
Well, we saw in the meeting today, one of the big issues is how to reach all the farmers. Because there are many small farmers, and it's very difficult, the logistic, to take the products over there, and how to provide them with efficiency, with good quality vaccine, and reach the users with this quality.
Okay, so we've heard from Galvamed and we've heard from AgResults. Now I've tracked down two animal health companies to talk about foot and mouth disease. I'm here with George Matlow from BVI and Jacques Bonin from Boehringer. Could you both introduce yourselves and talk a little bit about your company and the role you have at the company?
Yeah, my name is George Maxwell. I'm the general manager of Botswana Vaccine Institute Limited. It's a state-owned company for Botswana government, wholly owned by Botswana government, but which operated from 1978 with cooperation of Ifa Merio, Ron Merio, now Boehringer Ingelheim. We manufacture foot and mouth disease vaccine for our country and for marketing in the SADC region.
And Jacques?
So I'm Jacques Bonin. So I'm managing the division of Veterinary Public Health Department within Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health. Okay. So that's a global division of Boehringer Ingelheim Animal Health.
And what sort of work have you been involved in terms of FMD?
So FMD, we are working on developing vaccine. We have an R&D program. But also we are producing and distributing FMD vaccine globally.
Okay, so for both of you, how much of the work that you've done with FMD vaccines has been carried out in-house, and how much has been work with partners?
So concerning Boehringer Ingelheim and the legacy veterinary public health department we have, it's completely in-house that we are developing, producing, and selling. But also we have some partnership with some countries like Botswana, where we have a technical partnership, but also we have sometimes some industrial partnership with some countries where we are doing some final steps of production, like formulation or formulation and feeding. Okay. And we have such country with South Korea, Vietnam, South Korea and Vietnam, in Morocco also, and Botswana, where we have a partnership in the production, technical production.
Yeah. Interestingly, we benefited from technology transfer from BI to Botswana. This started as far back as 1978.
Oh, wow.
Prior to 1978, vaccines for FMD control were imported from Europe. And in the late 70s, 78, 79, we realized that the vaccine was not effective in controlling the outbreaks. And at that time, Botswana was highly dependent on beef exports to Europe. And we needed to quickly establish our own internal safeguards to secure the beef export and trade. And as such, we entered into an agreement with BI, Boehringer Ingelheim, or Imperial then, which allowed us to use their license to manufacture and export, first to sell in the country, but then to export and assure the quality. So this also allowed us to do joint research using our own local strains to develop vaccines to fast track such that we are assured of the quality and effectiveness of the vaccine. I can say that we've been in cooperation over 40 years. In 2018, we commemorated 40 years of joint existence, and we're still going to explore more opportunities to expand the existing cooperation.
Okay.
40 years of successful collaboration.
Yeah. And how commercially important are foot and mouth disease vaccines to your portfolio?
Significantly so.
Yeah.
Foot and mouth disease vaccine contributes over 80% of our revenues. And I must say that though it's a state-owned company, government of Botswana does not fund BVI. We fund ourselves from sales revenues. So FMD is very, very critical for our existence.
And how about Boehringer?
Well, in terms of absolute sales value, it's not that big. It's less than 5% of the animal health turnover. But in terms of value, in terms of qualitative value, because we are describing that as a core element of our strategy. We need to be in the vet public health department segment. We need to protect livestock. For FMD, for BTB, or other animal for rabies, and it's key for us.
5% of a billion euro company is still quite big.
For sure. It's less than five.
Oh, okay.
And it's a 4 billion for animal health.
Yeah.
Okay, 4 billion. But okay, yes, for sure, it's significant. But in terms of percentage value for the company, not that big.
Okay. And so I was wondering, how do the costs of developing a foot and mouth disease vaccine compare to other livestock vaccines that you've worked on?
Well, FMD vaccine is, the virus is quite complex. to follow, and there is always vaccines that need to be updated concerning the epidemiology. So you always have continuous investment, and our division is at a high rate of investment in research and development compared to our net sales. So it's a high investment. I would say that perhaps so far it was less expensive to develop an FMD vaccine because there was some fast track depending on the request from countries, but more and more the requirements in terms of regulatory affairs are matching the expectation from normal vaccine. And well, so the cost, I would say that now is quite similar perhaps to normal vaccines.
The same.
Additionally, as Jack says, we are lucky that the strains that we've adopted have remained consistent. They are more serodominant. They are more dominant strains than they. But the expenses come from that when we, you look at the variety of the serotypes, there are 7 serotypes. So you have to actually consistently blend multivalences, unlike other vaccines where there's single strain. So like in our case, we don't just use one strain for one serotype. We use more than one. So we are using more active ingredients or antigens to formulate. So this actually becomes very costly.
Right.
And we have to do that so that we provide for cross protection of one serotype to reinforce and ensure that there is good payload and good strength or coverage.
In that aspect, you need with the epidemiology, you need to match the epidemiology of the country or the region. And so you're not developing one FMD vaccine globally. You need to have several FMD vaccines. So in that aspect, it costs more than also a distemper vaccine for dogs or something like that. And the other aspect is the manufacturing cost. Because you know, to produce a FMD vaccine, you need to produce them in a biosafety containment, high biosafety containment area. Mm-hmm. And so the cost of manufacturing also has an impact on the global cost of the vaccine.
And where does Boehringer produce most of its FMD
vaccines? So we have a factory in Latin America, we have one in the Netherlands, we have one in the UK, and we are building a new one in Lyon right now in France.
Ah, yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
The other aspect of the cost should not be forgotten. We are based in Gaborone and Botswana in Africa, but we find that we import raw materials from Europe, so that the quality is consistent. And like I said, we are using Meriel Boehringer license, so we have to satisfy their requirements. We don't just buy raw materials elsewhere, they are selected suppliers.
And
it's not possible to substitute.
And maybe focusing now specifically on Africa, and I was wondering if there are any other challenges in developing new FMD vaccines and commercializing these new vaccines in particularly in Africa.
In Africa, again epidemiologically, these viruses have set themselves up into clusters or pools. They are well distributed. We know that distribution because we do continuous epidemiological update because the BVI also has an activity of reference laboratory activity. So we continuously receive samples for validation and confirmation of the serotypes which are involved in outbreaks before we make vaccine. And then after we have isolated the serotypes, we will do vaccine matching to demonstrate that the vaccine by the commercial side of the company is suitable. So that helps us to confirm that. And the challenges that we have is that not all regions are well represented. They don't submit serotypes or virus from outbreaks regularly. So there are gaps in there. But going forward, so that the challenge that we also have is this short immunity, the 6 months and whatever it is. So we always want to do more developmental work, research and development, to see if we can have new generation vaccines, way we don't use the whole virus. Maybe you can use subunit vaccine, which will be more probably effective, more immunogenic, and we don't need the biosecurity
of
our years. So these are the evolution, but this will take some time.
Yeah.
At the same time, we realize that these old conventional vaccines, if they are kept properly, they are very effective.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And to add on that, on the term of producing a FMD vaccine for Africa, one of the issues we are facing is the demand evaluation, and so how can we plan what's going to be used on what is the real demand, and how we can engage country, and we say in sustainable vaccination campaign over several years, because you can produce if there is a demand, but it should not be a one-time vaccination program, and so. That's somewhere we have some issues. It's to have a good planning over 5 to 10 years. Yeah, that's the main issue we have. Yeah.
And so we've been at a conference that's focused a lot on FMD, and one of the presentations was from Galfmed and AgResults, and they've launched this foot and mouth disease vaccine competition. I just wanted to get your thoughts on what did you find interesting or exciting about this particular project.
I think so. There was different aspects which were discussed, and first, I'm very positive about this this project, and I think it could be a very good pilot to start implementing a vaccination program on a long term. So, one very good aspect is a discussion about the product profile, which is the same for all companies, and the potential pre-qualification system that we would. That is going to exist, because it will. There is a strong wish to work towards a high quality vaccine, or at least quality vaccine, to be sure that we pre-qualify the quality of the vaccine, and that we will not see failure in the vaccination program because of the quality of the vaccine. So for me, it's a good pilot. It's not about the size of the project because it's not that big, but at least it will organize a pilot. A model that could serve as a good way of promoting vaccination program in the future. Yeah.
Also, the prospect, our market currently is just the SADC region, which is really not as significant in terms of population as East Africa. So this is very, very interesting because if you take Ethiopia, Sudan, Tanzania, that's where the livestock biodiversity is heavily distributed, and it gives us prospects to expand our market to that, and if we do that, it will also make us to start forecasting on capacity increases, and that will make our significant growth if we were to win this. And it was also a balanced risk, because if we're just to be doing that on our own, taking risks of building a market, and maybe there will never be any substantive takeoff, but now there's a partner who is willing to support the manufacturer, invest, or do research and development. I think that's it's a secure way of helping us to sustain ourselves, not just dreaming or yes, at least you can see that we can face it and start investing, and also improving the material, the strains. East African countries, they are very diverse, and they also have their own laboratories, but the last point will also be the socio-economic. If East Africa can manage, we can manage jointly to control FMD. They can use the livestock population for enriching their communities and societal development and whatever it is, because otherwise it's just going to waste.
I think it's innovative to have this kind of tripartite project with so states, public, private, and the donors. It's quite innovative, and I think it has a great future for Africa. It's a good model to demonstrate that there is a benefit in the value of vaccination. And we have an example like that with we are working already with Galfmed on the last mile project. Perhaps you heard about it. We are working on the awareness and pathology, on the availability on the product, and so that's where we are working today. And I think it will promote the use of vaccine in Africa. Yeah. I think it's a good move. Very good.
We hope to qualify.
And on that bombshell at the end, the news that BVI hopes to qualify. Thank you for your time. Thanks for giving us an industry eye view on foot and mouth disease and foot and mouth disease vaccine development.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Explore more from this podcast and find additional insight and intelligence at agribusinessintelligence.com.